Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we feature an interview with Virginia McDowell, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Isle of Capri Casinos, and how the company has changed since he took over a little more than a year ago. McDowell is a longtime casino executive whose most notable experience was helping to build Argosy Gaming into a Midwest powerhouse. At Isle of Capri, McDowell, along with CEO Jim Perry, another former Argosy executive, has outlined the important operational aspects and how the strategy to include the Lady Luck brand in some Isle casinos will be carried out. She spoke with me in a two-part interview, the first conducted in Las Vegas, and then a follow-up interview from her office in St. Louis in mid-September. Virginia McDowell, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to talk to you here. It's been a while since we've gotten together, and it's been a while since you've taken over the Isle of Capri. What, about a year now?
Or a little over a year.
How would you characterize what has happened during that year and what you've done to really turn this company around?
Well, I think that this is a transition process. Mm-hmm. I think that we're in the process of changing the company. And it has been a collaborative effort on the part of the management team at the corporate level, you know, as far as the contributions and the cooperation from our general managers, and certainly the process that we went through of building the strategic plan with our board of directors. When I joined the company last summer, you know, it was perfect timing on my part, because literally I think it was 2 days before the credit market shut down. We had just completed our refinancing, which, you know, we're very fortunate that we did, because, you know, it is a tremendous asset to us at this point. But it was really when we first started seeing signs that there was a lot of pressure on the economy. And we had just opened our three most recent properties, of which two of them have not lived up, I think, to anyone's expectations. And one of them, Waterloo, was ramping up a little more slowly. So we kind of had our hands full. And what we did is you know, looked around at the company, and you know, there were some obvious things that we could do in the short term. One of the things that we focused on was improving our margins and reducing our expenses, both at the site level and at the corporate level. That required that we kind of do you know, a forensic analysis of legacy programs. And one of the things that I tried to push down was the concept of making decisions close to the customers. Isle had moved towards centralization over the last few years, and a lot of the decisions that were being made at the corporate office, you know, you can't do the same type of things in a Pompano and a Waterloo that you do in a Natchez and a Marquette.
Right.
You know, your customer bases are very different, and when you are as geographically diverse as we are, you have to take that into consideration as well. Got to the fall, and of course Jim Perry had joined the company at the same time that I did as a member of our board of directors. Jim chaired a strategic committee. It was a joint committee of senior management team of the board and several members of our board of directors, including Bernie Goldstein, who was still our CEO at the time, and our chair, and Rob Goldstein, who was our vice chair. And we just looked at the company. You know, we looked at who we were, and we looked at what our opportunities were, and, you know, kind of had the what do you want to be when you grow up decision.
Right.
And, you know, what came out of that was the strategic plan, which we introduced in early in 2008, that basically said, you know, we have a great portfolio. And what we need to do is we need to look at organic growth opportunities in the short term, to stop, you know, going after or chasing, you know, transformational projects, and to look at what we needed to do both from an operational perspective and what capital we had to reinvest in our properties in order, you know, to make us more competitive in our markets. It's been a busy year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the board of directors and also some of the management you brought in. A lot of the team that was with Argosy, with you and Jim Perry, that produced such you know, really impressive results while you were there, have joined you at Isle. Why is that so important that you got this team together, and also people who have been here and know the culture?
Well, you just answered that question. It's the perfect melding of the two. It's interesting. When Jim and I joined Argosy in 1997, both of us had worked at the Tropicana in Atlantic City. Jim and I have worked together for over 20 years. And we had come from the Tropicana. We brought Jim Gulbranson with us, who was our Senior VP of Operations at the time, and it was just the three of us. So the team that became Argosy was, you know, the three of us that came basically from the Atlantic City market and the entire Argosy team that was there. So it was a great melding at the time. You know, that team being able to get back together again, you know, various bits and pieces of it, and combining with the significant talent that we found at Isle is very much the same situation, the same set of circumstances that we found back in 1997. You know, we have a company that has tremendous potential, and we have a team that is dedicated to, you know, making it happen.
Right, right. You've got 16 properties. Is there one that you consider the Isle flagship?
No, not at this point. I think that's evolving. You know, clearly, if you look again at, you know, the properties that we introduced over the last year, Pompano is a magnificent facility. Waterloo is a magnificent facility. And you know, I believe that is the direction that the board of directors had wanted Isle to, you know, to begin to go. But, you know, we're in the process right now of master planning Biloxi. And, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities for us based on either the land that we own in these markets or the potential, or, you know, we believe the growth potential. There's all kinds of opportunities for us as we introduce our two-brand portfolio to introduce a series of Isles and a series of Lady Lux, but not necessarily a flagship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like most gaming stocks, Isle stock has been buffeted in the last couple of years.
I'll say.
But some analysts have said now that it's really hit bottom, that all the bad news has been accounted for, and everything that could go wrong has gone wrong, I guess you could say. Do you agree with that assessment, and that things are now looking up for Isle?
Well, clearly, again, if you go back to the fact that a year ago we had just introduced three properties, you know, where the company had invested over $500 million and clearly weren't getting the returns that the street was looking for, we had to shake that out.
Right.
We had to get on the other side of that, and we're in the process of doing that. Waterloo is ramping up nicely. We have been very transparent that the investment in Coventry probably was not a good one, and we are in the process of looking to see what our exit strategy could be. Pompano is a difficult situation because, you know, we spent almost $200 million there and built a beautiful facility, but it has become increasingly difficult for us to compete in Florida. I think that we have done a good job. If you look year over year, quarter over quarter, as far as margin improvement is concerned, I think we've done a good job in terms of stabilizing our operations. I think we've done a great job in terms of getting our management team focused on the type of things that they have to do to create great experiences for our customers. And I think that with Jim Perry and Dale Black and Richard Weber, you know, at the helm of our financial team, we have the team that has, you know, when they were at Argosy, built one of the strongest balance sheets in gaming. So, you know, we understand fiscal responsibility. The other part of the strategic plan that we developed with the board was that we were going to focus on organic growth opportunities, but that we were going to measure ourselves by increasing free cash flow. And we, I believe, have the entire company focused on that right now. So if you take a page out of that Argosy playbook and you look at the fact that we had a reputation, you know, we thought about every dollar that we invested in capital. We expected the properties to spend the maintenance capex that they needed to in order to keep the facilities clean, safe, friendly, and fun. But when it came to project capital or expansion capital, if we weren't going to get a return on it, we're not going to spend it. So, you know, as we have introduced our strategic plan, we have been very careful about the projects, you know, that we've talked about over the next 18 to 24 months. So I think that, you know, with the pressure, the continuing pressure on the national economy, I think that we have taken the steps necessary to strengthen the company. I think that we are being very conservative as far as our balance sheet is concerned. You know, quite frankly, we're not going to do anything that's going to put any pressure on our covenants at all. You just can't do that.
Right, right. There's a couple of issues out there that could positively impact the company in the next year. These are the referendums that are being held in Colorado and Missouri in the next year, this year, right? And could possibly add to the profitability of all the casinos in those jurisdictions. Can you explain how that will impact Isle should they be successful?
Probably more so in Colorado than Missouri. Even though we have three properties in Missouri, they're relatively small, you know, as far as the portfolio is concerned. The quid pro quo for the initiative is an increase in the tax rate. So for our properties, because they're not major tourist destinations, and except for Kansas City, which is the smallest of the Kansas City properties, you know, we're really not dependent upon the meeting and convention business. You know, the loss limit probably is not going to impact us as much, and it's probably going to be a push as far as the tax rate is concerned. The reason why we are looking forward to this in Missouri, if it should pass in November, is because it dramatically improves the experience for the customer if you don't have to go through the process of getting a card, you know, every time you, you know, go onto the casino floor. It's just when you do that, it's a choke point. You know, it's very difficult, particularly, you know, on the weekends and holidays when it's very busy, and it frustrates the customer. So even though we, you know, it probably won't be a huge financial, positive financial impact to us, anything that improves the customer experience is something that we support. Colorado is different. We have the largest footprint between Colorado Central Station and Isle and Blackhawk in the state of Colorado. And, you know, that is something that we would be looking forward to.
And what are the prospects, do you think, for both of these referendums?
We're not as involved in Missouri. That's really Pinnacles and Ameristar show. So I read it just like you do. And, you know, from what I hear, they're polling well. And I think that it's going to be a pretty strong turnout at the polls this November, and I think that that probably works in the favor of you know the initiative. Same in Colorado. You know, I am familiar with the polls in Colorado, and we are polling well there. So, you know, again, I think that that big turnout in November should work in our favor, but we'll see.
I just read that a lot of the casinos have committed to investing in their properties should this go through. Do you have investment plans to expand either one of your properties there?
We haven't announced anything in Colorado yet. We were taking kind of a wait-and-see approach, but, you know, I'm sure that we will be in a position to react.
Okay. Let's go back to Florida for a minute.
I knew you were going there.
Obviously, it's a very difficult environment, and you've built a great property there. I mean, it's very attractive, very modern, very up-to-date, you know, certainly, you know, at a level where you could compete with the Seminoles if you had a level playing field, but obviously they don't pay any taxes, and now they have
very little.
Right, now they have table games. Do you expect any relief from that anytime soon, or is that just a situation that has no resolution at the end of the rainbow here?
Well, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act stipulates that before a tribe can offer, you know, a particular form of Class 3 gaming, it has to be legal in the state. And table games are not legal in the state of Florida, other than poker. They're not legal for the Seminoles. They're not legal for us. The difference is that if we offered table games, we would either be subject to huge fines and or our license would be in jeopardy. So clearly the playing field is not leveled. It's an untenable situation. We tried through the legislature last year to get regulatory relief or legislative relief. We weren't successful. We told the legislature at the time what we felt the impact of table games would be. Clearly, when you're looking at our business year over year, you're starting to see that impact. And we, you know, obviously, the Supreme Court has essentially ruled that the compact's invalid. You know, Florida now is in a position where the you know, Governor Crist, the Supreme Court has determined that Governor Crist did not have the ability to act independently without the legislature. So now we're in a situation where the Seminoles have table games, and technically, because the compact's invalid, they don't have to pay the state anything. So the legislature's going to have another conversation about this, and what we're hoping is that when they do have that conversation, they realize that when we talked about that on level playing field, we were telling the truth.
Now, you've also let your option lapse with that the highlight parlor that you were
Miami
in.
Yes, we did.
And obviously just a direct result of this unlevel playing field.
You know, clearly, I mean, if you build the facility that we did at Pompano Park, which is magnificent, and, you know, we're struggling to, you know, make it work financially, and that was before Class 3 gaming, you know, in the with the Seminoles, You know, clearly it's not in our best interest to look to expand in Florida at this point.
Right. And your location is actually better than the Seminole Casino, you know, directly off of 95 there.
That's what we thought.
It made sense at the time. Okay, let's go to the other difficult situation, the UK situation.
You're going across the pond.
Why not? We're talking about nasty stuff already. And certainly, if the government in Florida isn't responding, I think you can say the same thing about the government in the UK.
It's a very similar situation, though. I mean, it's not the same in terms of the playing field
right.
not being leveled, but very much the same as the U.S. as far as the economy is concerned. So what you have in the United Kingdom is the net effect of tax increases, regulatory change, and a smoking ban. That has just literally rocked the entire UK gaming industry. And as a result of this, you know, it has become increasingly difficult, even if you look at, you know, the larger companies, you know, if you look at Gala, you know, if you look at Stanley, everyone is struggling, and they're struggling, whether it be bingo, they're struggling, whether it be, the betting
right.
parlors. Everybody's struggling right now, so it's not just us.
Yeah.
We clearly overinvested in the UK, and you know we're trying to make the best of a bad situation right now.
And this isn't just a U.S. company, you know, skipping into there and not understanding what was going on. This is just the effect of the economy and the lack of the response from the government to mitigate
the lack of the response of the government. And again, if you look at the major operators, you know, across the UK. You know, they are closing bingo parlors
sure.
left and right. And, you know, we're at a position right now where, you know, the government had made the decision to go ahead and issue the, you know, 8 large and 8 small licenses. And even that's now hung up in yet another round of, you know, parliamentary debate.
Right,
so
right.
it doesn't look like, you know, certainly in the short term that there's any relief. And,
yep.
you know, I think it's going to take a while for the for UK gaming to recover.
Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about an exit strategy. Is one of them to just possibly close the whole thing down?
We're looking at all of our options, Roger, at this point. You know, we hired UBS to work with us on this, and you know, we're not ready to talk about that at this point.
Okay. The other international situation that's a little rocky is the Bahamas. I've seen that property. It's a beautiful property.
It's beautiful property.
You know, right on the ocean in the Bahamas, on the Grand Bahamas Island. But it's never seemed to work. I mean, what's the problem down there?
Well, I think one of the reasons, quite frankly, is because Freeport doesn't pay the same attention to or is not as interested in tourism, for example, as Nassau. And as a result of that, you know, this is a lease. You
right.
know, it's an amenity to, you know, the Arlucaya complex.
Right.
So there's not a lot that we can do to drive business there. We're dependent upon the two hotels that sit in this complex, which is a Westin and a Sheraton. They're beautiful hotels.
Right.
It is a beautiful property. But, you know, if you can't get cruise ships into the ports and you can't get, you know, scheduled air service, you know, from the mainland, it makes it very difficult.
Right.
So we don't have a lot invested there.
Right.
You know, and we're just, you know, again, taking kind of a wait-and-see attitude. To see what's going on. But here again, you know, clearly the Bahamas has been impacted by Class 3 gaming in Florida.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it used to be where you could go to play Class 3 slot machines and table games.
Looking for the most informative weekly publication in the gaming industry? Subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the only electronic news magazine that brings the news of the gaming industry to your desktop every Monday morning. Global Gaming Business Weekly is a complete publication with information on the gaming industry in the U.S., Europe, Asia, and beyond. Read about the latest moves in Indian gaming, the updated research about problem gaming, the breaking news that will impact everyone in the gaming industry all in one publication. Global Gaming Business Weekly is read by all the top executives in the gaming industry before they start their work week. Shouldn't you? To subscribe, go to the Global Gaming Business website, www.ggbmagazine.com, click on the Global Gaming Business Weekly icon. Don't be the last to know. Read Global Gaming Business Weekly every Monday morning.
How about some other international expansion? In fact, our cover story in our October issue is about Ireland. Are you going to be looking there at all?
I think when you look at what we have discussed as far as our strategic plan is concerned, We're looking at organic growth opportunities, mm-hmm. and I think that that would be more on the domestic side.
Okay. And talking about the domestic side, you had a property in Vegas for a while, the Lady Luck in downtown Las Vegas, and you sold that. Are you still interested in Nevada at any point?
I don't think that the major destinations at this point are part of our core competency.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously, you know, anytime you look at expansion into, you know, either Atlantic City or Las Vegas, you know, table stakes now are you know, usually in the billions.
Right.
And since we are being very conservative with our balance sheet and making sure that to the extent that we do take advantage of organic growth opportunities, we look at the existing portfolio in terms of ways that we can increase free cash flow. I don't think that you're going to see Isle as a major player in, you know, Atlantic City or Las Vegas.
Okay. But it could possibly be in the outer regions of Nevada, some of the feeder markets and things of that nature?
We're not actively looking at anything, Roger, right now, but we'll always listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about operating in this economy. Obviously, the growth opportunities in terms of expansion aren't there to a large extent, although I'm sure there's some good deals out there as well. But are you looking to really just consolidate your operations and operate them as efficiently and effectively as possible until we get through this period?
That has been our focus, and it's been our focus for quite some time now. For a little over a year now, what we've really focused on is margin improvement and looking at efficiencies both at the corporate level and at the site level. The strategic plan that we introduced earlier this year and that we are currently executing against is based on key operating initiatives. It is our belief that most of the money in the United States, the wealth in the United States right now, resides with the baby boomers. You know, depending on who you talk to, Americans over the age of 50 control about 70% of all the wealth in the United States, which is estimated at over $7 trillion, and nearly 80% of all the financial assets in America. While there's a lot of pressure on the economy right now, it's our belief that once consumer confidence starts to increase and once there's less turmoil in the financial markets, that you're going to start seeing, you know, the retail play come back and you're going to start seeing a larger share of wallet from our database customers. So our goal is during this time period to operate as efficiently as possible, but also to take this time period to focus on creating a great experience for the customer so that we are in place or we're, you know, positioned when consumer confidence increases.
Okay. So you think you're in a good place to be once the economy turns around?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your two brands, the Lady Luck brand versus the Isle brand. How do you differentiate between those two?
Well, by creating the local brand and repositioning these properties, we gain credibility or we gain several advantages. One of them is the ability to maximize the profitability of the local brand by pulling costs out of the properties. This can be centralizing many of the management functions, marketing information technology, much of which we already do right now. Centralize the decision-making process, and then focus on absolutely nailing the attributes that are of the greatest importance to a customer who truly views this type of property as a local establishment. Mm-hmm. And then as our balance sheet becomes stronger, the creation of this local brand potentially makes us a logical acquirer of other smaller facilities like this across the United States.
Sure.
So if you look at the difference between the two brands, the Isle brand is aimed more at a regional market. You may have a fine dining experience, you know, convention and meeting space, a name entertainment venue, spa workout area, business center, you know, something that a meeting planner, you know, would look at in terms of, okay, this is a property that we can go to that, you know, creates an entertainment experience for us. Lady Luck is focused on clean, safe, friendly, and fun. You know, a friendly, right-sized bar with great music, you know, market-specific food, value-priced gaming product, make sure that the employees are the friendliest that they can be, make sure, you know, that you have the right product on the casino floor. So it's really just truly a locals establishment versus a more regional option.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Where do you see Isle being in 5 years, given let's assume the economy turns around in a couple of years here? Is Are you going to be one of the major players in the industry, or do you see yourself as a niche market player?
Well, we're already one of the major players when you look at the size
of... Sure, absolutely.
But I think, again, it's focusing on our objective is to look at our existing portfolio, look at our organic growth opportunities, and focus on finding opportunities to increase free cash flow. That may come through, an expansion at one of our existing properties. It may come from taking advantage of being able to buy a distressed property from another company. But it will all be based on generating free cash flow and, quite frankly, making sure that we don't put any pressure on our balance sheet.
Okay. let's talk about your chairman, who was just honored last week with the entry into the AGA Gaming Hall of Fame. He had always run the company as a family company where everybody seemed to know each other, and there was definitely a concern from the top for the employees. Are you making efforts to maintain that, and as he leaves the picture here?
Well, as I was honored and fortunate enough to be able to introduce Bernie at the Gaming Hall of Fame. And one of the things that I mentioned in my remarks was that long before corporate social responsibility was a buzzword, it's the way Bernie lived his life and ran his businesses. And certainly it will continue to be a focus of this company going forward. And I think if you look at our new CEO and you look at Jim Perry, this has been a hallmark of his career as well.
So Isle will continue to be run as a family-style corporation, even as you grow.
Well, I think that we will continue to focus on creating value for our shareholders, making sure that we are an employer of choice, and making sure that we are a contributor in the communities where we do business.
Okay. Well, Virginia McDowell, thanks. It's been nice talking to you over these two separate sessions, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.
Thank you, Roger. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about this or any subject, visit our websites at ggvmagazine.com or casinoconnection.com. To stay in touch with the industry, subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the industry's only comprehensive electronic news magazine delivered to your desk every Monday morning. Download subscription forms at the Global Gaming Business website. For now, thanks for listening to the Global Gaming Business Podcast.